All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about a concept. For about a year ago, I guess, NCFI got a whole bunch of the Centers of Excellence together, and we started talking about what we could do on the grid, what we could present at VIN, and had sort of a hot wash. And afterwards, a couple of us, Ron Price and myself at least, and amongst others, said, well, and it was sort of brought up already, is not everybody's willing to share data always outside their firewall. And in some cases, it's, you know, against state laws. So in that situation, how is the grid going to help those folks? And so we said, we've got to sort of spin this the other way around and talk about how we can take services and bring them to the data, as opposed to always talking about taking data and sending them out to the services. So Ron's background, and unfortunately he's not here, from Utah, is in the high performance computing. So his focus was more on the big projects that a Globus grid is normally built for. Is how do you run 1,000 simultaneous processes over data sets. My background, as sort of mentioned before, is from the Essence disease surveillance system. So definitely not the high performance computing side of the house, but more just the data services. So I'm going to start with Ron's stuff, get that done and move it out of the way. The sort of standard model of computational service strategies, and Robbie can correct me later, is to think about having, I'm going to grab the mouse. To think about having all of this local data that's sitting behind your firewall, and you've got some local application, and you need to run it, you know, in some SaaS process that's going to slice it up 1,000 ways from Sunday. So what you end up doing a lot of times is send your data request out to some remote grid resource, let's say on a remote network, which turns around, breaks it up into chunks, creates 100 instances of some process, runs it in parallel, packages it back up, and then sends the results back to the user. What you'll notice here, though, is I kind of colored the blue icons where your local data is touching. And so what you start seeing here is local data is here, then it's in your application, it's going out on the request, the grid resource gets it, every instance gets it, and so, you know, the data is going outside the firewall. There's some benefits to this, though. The remote network, the remote grid resource, can be a huge supercomputer. It could be the TerraGrid. It could be whatever. You know, there's no way, unless you're the TerraGrid, you know, to sort of compete with those sorts of resources. So if you need that sort of resources, you know, that performance is a huge benefit. The issues, though, are data privacy, and we talked a little bit about bandwidth already. If you're sending large amounts of data, unlike a lot of the big scientific organizations, a little public health department may not have a, you know, OC3 bandwidth pipe going to the local public health department. So bandwidth is a concern. And then reliability is sort of an interesting thing here because it's a double-edged sword. I say reliability just from the fact that If you're a local public health person and you're relying on that data and that process to be there every day, you're now relying on that remote service to be there tomorrow. And if you don't have a really good service level agreement or a whole lot of trust in them, that could be an issue. The reverse, of course, is true, is if you're hosting your own, you know, sort of Nimbus cloud or what have you, it's on you to make sure that that thing stays up and is working correctly, but at least it's an issue that's entirely within your control. So what we talked about, Ron and I, about this bringing the services to the data changes this just a little bit. So now what you've got, local data in your local application is talking to a local grid VM cloud, which is using a little tool, a VM replicator is sort of what we called it, which can go out to the remote grid resource, get whatever service, whatever virtual machine image it needs, pulls that virtual machine image back, and then can spin up its own local VM cloud, and then puts your data just in the local cloud. So again, if you look at the outline in blue, what you'll see is now your data isn't going outside the firewall. There's obviously benefits and disadvantages to this as well, but we said the word virtual machine image because at least the work that Ron's been doing has been to try and take a complete virtual machine image of all the tools that a public health person might need and be able to kind of pull those over and spin them up in a Nimbus cloud and have access to them. So Now when we kind of look at this again, the benefits are you're keeping all your data local. You don't have the bandwidth issues because you're not necessarily sending the data outside the firewall over the internet. Reliability, like I said before, is both a benefit and an issue, but at least it's completely within your local control. Now when you get to the issues, you get back to performance, sort of going the other way around. You've got to pay for the big box that can handle this. And then security, this was the one I've sort of brought up, and I don't know that we've still quite kind of cracked yet, which is, you know, will a local public health department's, you know, security people be interested in taking a complete VM from an outside source and spinning it up on their own network? And so that could be resolved through certification or some sort of blessing system governance. All right, so then we went to, so that's sort of the computational side of the house, and then we're gonna do sort of the data service. So it's late in the day, so we're gonna do a little experiment just for the fun of it. Look to the person sort of around you and tell them your age. If you want to, you don't have to do this. And they're gonna tell you if they're younger or older. Anybody wanna do it? No, that's fine, we can just go one way. All right. So, that was easy. So everybody raise your hand who decided not to participate in that study. Did anybody decide not to? There's at least one. So sharing data isn't always something people are willing to do, no matter how innocuous it is. So it's amazing, you know, it's public health. It's been 10 years since I've been doing this, and it's just there are times where it doesn't matter what it is. If that data is going to go outside their firewall or outside of their control, they're having none of it. It just isn't going to happen. So for those folks, how can the grid still help them? So I'm going to sort of show what the concept was at the time, which was, you know, detection services or NLP algorithms. We could have every center of excellence or whoever spin these up and have them on the grid, and local public health departments will be able to send their data out to them and get these great results back. And so you can see again here, you know, the blue outline, that means data is going outside the firewall. So someone's got to agree to do that. So benefits of that, though, is you get the leading edge tool, the leading edge service, whatever the best algorithm is, you know, that's out there and available. So you can stay very up to date. You get the flexibility. So if you decide tomorrow that that algorithm that's sitting, you know, at that location isn't as good as that one over there because you saw some Finn presentation and you didn't like the way the person spoke, you can switch that, you know, instantly. You have the ability, you can pull any resource off the grid. But now you got back to data privacy, bandwidth, performance, reliability, all the same sort of issues as before. So what we started doing was talking about, well, instead of having the services out there, what if we had a service marketplace where you could go out and sort of get a line listing or your application that you're using, you don't even necessarily have to do this, but your tools you're using could go out to this grid service marketplace and say, I need a detector that meets this interface specification and pull back the grid service and then have a little replicator that loads that up into a local Tomcat container or service container. And now you've got access to the grid services locally inside your firewall. The data doesn't go outside anymore. So the benefits here are, if you can get people to agree on standard interfaces for things, okay, so big, huge red if, right? It still could happen that the detection analysis services, the NLP services, your tools could go out to this marketplace, grab them, pull them back, and load them up into a local Tomcat container, or service container of some kind. That isn't necessarily needing the supercomputer TerraGrid sorts of things. If your local data only, you know, needs to be ran on a laptop, you know, that may be all you need to have. So this is just a matter of getting the application correct and making it easy enough for people to spin these things up. So now, at least in this model, I'm going to say that you don't have issues other than the one we talked about before, which is reliability, because you're in control of the reliability. So if you're not really good at keeping your computers up, reliability is an issue, but at least it's within your control. So, all right, so now we've sort of gone through, I'm gonna walk through an example, and you're a local disease surveillance application, and you wanna analyze a new algorithm that you saw at Finn. So the thought would be you log in to your local disease surveillance application, and inside of that tool, they've got the ability to go out onto the grid, hit the service marketplace, and give you a listing of all the detection algorithms that that local disease surveillance application can handle and can utilize right then and there. So you get this listing of the algorithms. You see the Detect2K9, you know, super algorithm that you saw at Finn, and you can click on that. And now your application can go out, grab it, pull it across the wire, and then down here, the little service replicator can take that GAR or whatever the app, you know, the GAR being the grid archive resource. One of these days I'm going to remember that archive or that acronym, and can take that GAR and can load it up into your local grid service container. So once that detection, the 2K9, Detect2K9, is sitting behind your firewall in your service container, now your local disease surveillance application can start using it right then and there. It's not the standard model, the grid we've been discussing for the last few years of sending your data out and having the answers come back, but it is something that the grid can still facilitate by having a secure, easy way of going out and grabbing these things on an on-demand sort of situation. The other issue at the bottom of the screen is, you know, tomorrow when the Detect2K9 people, you know, generate version 2, it'll be on the service marketplace, it'll be available, your local disease surveillance application can check for an update, automatically download it and populate that in the local disease surveillance application, and the user doesn't even have to know. So the current work sort of we've been doing is trying to figure out how to get that service replicator to do that in an automated function. What we've figured out at least so far is that it's technically possible. We just got to kind of work through all the processes. And one of the huge benefits of Finn is you can come and network and talk about your issues. And so Robbie's telling me that they've already got half of this stuff done in the next version of Globus. So those are the sorts of things that this conference is great for, and I appreciate. And so I think, you know, hearing that and knowing what I sort of already knew about this stuff, I think it's, you know, all this stuff is possible and gives us another way to use the grid, even for those folks that have issues with privacy of the data. So the last thing I was going to talk about was the standards again, just to kind of touch on it one more time. If folks in each of these domains, like disease surveillance work, can start to agree upon standard interfaces for certain functions, like algorithm, temporal detection algorithms, like visualization, like natural language processing for the chief complaint processors or clinic notes. We don't have to all agree on what the best algorithm is, but if we can agree on the interfaces, then tools like this can start using them with absolutely no IT necessary. You know, when tomorrow, you know, Ryan in Indiana says, I really want to use this cool new algorithm that I've, you know, heard about from California, if they meet the interface, then I don't even have to go to his site and change any code. There's no compiling at all. He can go to the service marketplace, grab that detector, spin it up, and life is great. And I think that's eventually where we need to get. It'll take time. Standards always take time. But that's something that I hope that this work starts to bring about is, you know, yeah, it's nice that I could go out to a marketplace and grab 10 detectors, but if I've got to have two IT staff constantly changing the interfaces to get them to work, it still isn't doing me a whole lot of good. So, but we'll get there. We'll get there someday. So those are my end of my talk. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Wayne. Any questions for Wayne at this point?
So do you have some kind of service registry somewhere where people can go and browse the service data?
So right now the service registry is the wiki that the folks at NICFI are sort of hosting. And I think our hope is to take the wiki and formalize it in a way, whether it's UDDI or whatever it is, and tack on the correct metadata that says, okay, I'm using this standard interface or I'm this type of function, you know, is being provided so that we can start to do this. As far as, you know, what needs to be contained in there, I think, you know, we're getting close to that with the service registry as it is. This tool, I think, is going to require GARs or some sort of, you know, form of being able to grab the actual application and pull back. And so once we get through a little bit more prototypes and demos of that, I think that'll be where it'll happen.
Are you also thinking about service aggregation? Workflows?
So the workflow stuff is, at least to my knowledge of it, has been more used on the high performance computing stuff where you're trying to walk through a workflow and split up across the process. If it's different than that, I apologize. I don't know much more about it. So I'm going to punt on that one and have you talk to Ron about that. Or Ravi could answer.
Yes.
We've used Introduce and Gravy a little bit, and we talked once upon a time about our issues with Gravy, which is if you change anything, you got to start from square one again. But I think what we're hoping to do here is completely automate it so that the app can do it without even needing a human interface in the loop. So
we have a bunch of Java program
API. API. I definitely am.
I just sent an email to Ron also.
Okay, good.
So for workflow, it's from technology, again, from a technology point of view, CAB has similar use cases where they have all these services that have, they take inputs and outputs of and provides some logical connection between these services. So we are leveraging a tool called Taverna, which is a workflow designer tool that we made it work with the Grid services. So from within the workflow workbench, you can go query a registry and find the services that you're interested in or that you wanted to, and then drag and drop them onto workbench and connect them up in a meaningful, coherent way, and then say go. It will actually orchestrate different service interactions and provide you with the end result. So if you're interested, I mean, again, even all of this work is open source, part of Globus and CFA, and it could easily be applicable to anything that's using the same technology stack, which I think the PHGrid public information would use. So.
Yeah, and that reminds me of something else I probably was wanting to talk about, which is a lot of the Grid stuff isn't so much things that a user is going to see on a day-to-day basis. It is, in my mind at least, heavily focused towards the app developers who are out there building the tools for the users. And it sort of lays that framework then that, you know, and someone had mentioned it earlier, is, you know, not today, we're right now we're sharing little bits of data, but what about tomorrow? And so luckily the Globus Grid, you know, for a whole framework is built to be able to expand and scale and do a lot of those things. But if we can, you know, sort of do the baby steps now, we'll have that stuff available to us in the future when we actually need it. Good.
So I think this model is great for some of the services, some of the computational services that are actually relatively easily and technically packaged up and transported. But I know that there's quite a few of the services that actually, or the back end of that Grid service is actually quite complex. Has anyone done an assessment of how many of the things that we're talking about that people actually want to do or common use cases actually can be ported around like this? For example, I know that one of the Grid services that are out there right now is the Grid Medley service, mm-hmm. which has a complex backend. It's not just going to be moved around.
Sure. Yeah, it's not something that's going to solve every problem. And so, as a lot of the speakers so far have talked about this week, is you've got to have a problem that you're trying to solve, not just doing technology for the fun of it. So the problem here was that we've got folks who just legally cannot send their data outside their state firewall. So for those folks, you know, if Medley can't be moved, then I'm sorry, they're not going to get to use Medley and move on. They're going to have to use some other tool. But for the tools that can be packaged, can be downloaded, can be used, you know, that's what we wanted to have this capability in place for those folks. I know Ron at least has done some stuff with both SatScan and SAS, I believe were the two projects he's done so far, where he's taken those tools and moved them down and spun up into a Nimbus cloud. So it's been done with those. We've been doing it with the Essence detection algorithms and chief complaint processors. So it's not going to be the silver bullet that solves every problem, but it does have a set of issues it's trying to address. Yeah, and so, you know, if they have the ability to move it, then maybe there is a way to package it up. You know, it may be a tool that has to be VM'd as opposed to pulled across as a GAR, for example.
Just wanted to make a comment that, I mean, definitely this approach is a really nice technical solution.
not move the data. I mean, I'll just reiterate, I guess, that I think, though, this scenario of where you cannot move the data, I mean, if it's going to be that way, it's going to be that way. But I think it's useful, though, to still try to actually, as a community, I'll just say a broader health community, make sure that we are trying to change those restrictions, actually. I mean, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to, for example, send data to a grid service for analysis and processing, as long as, of course, there are processes, some kind of vetting in place that the service doesn't store the data. It's not going to cache the data. There's no security risk or other things, right? And so, and I would just kind of point out that I think that is probably a better route to go, you know, as a community in the future. And maybe in the meantime, of course, solutions like this look fantastic.
Yeah, so on Monday, during one of the talks, I think one of the things I said was the only people making money here are the lawyers. It really is. Someday all these problems we won't have to go around, but in the meantime, we're sort of stuck living in the world we are. Yeah. Brian. Yeah, most definitely. The interfaces both in and out have got to become standard so that, you know, if somebody wants to swap in a different detector or a different visualization or a different NLP algorithm, they'll be able to do that without having to go back to their IT shop and say, well, can you, how long is it going to take? You know, and then we make wild guesses. And
also, one thing that was interesting that they did is they actually had a vetting process for the SAS code. So you mentioned whether or not they would trust that service to run a trust.
Correct.
ATM.
Yeah, I think that's something I'm pretty sure the CEA Grid folks have done with their certification, their silver level, gold level, that sort of stuff, which I think we definitely have to leverage in this community that they've already kind of walked through is take those lessons learned and do that same thing. Because, I mean, there are security folks that, it's amazing the things you can't do anymore. But, and so, you know, being able to say, oh, I just like to download this whole entire VM and spin it up on your network. Oh yeah, right. You know, that's going to be a little hard to get them to agree to. But if you've got these sort of governances and processes in place, you know, at least you have a fighting chance. So. Yeah, and I
think there's, it's not, you can't lump all of that into just, you know, into that. I think it's unfair characterization because, see, a big process is very much tied into cancer problem. So there is semantics and syntactic reasons why they have a process in place. I think you don't have to adopt. Again, pick and choose what's appropriate and leverage it. Like if something is not appropriate and something is heavyweight for you, you don't have to adopt it. You know, so if you can, so just inputs and outputs to different programs, if there are doing similar things, you know, you could have a social consensus among people providing this analysis to agree on a standard interface, and that usually works much, much better than having a big governance body dictating how things.
Separate,
though, of course, between the two issues you mentioned. One, which is really a policy issue about how you use the software, how you share data, separate from, of course, what the technology is going to do. So I think it's very important to realize that Globus is, of course, a software toolkit. CEA Grid is a software toolkit. And how you use it, how you integrate it, is something you decide that meets your program needs, and meets your public health informatics use cases.
Yeah. Yeah, and at least from my perspective, I always sort of see things through this disease surveillance lens, and there's enough different disease surveillance applications that are out there that I could see the benefit. I mean, it's not hard to imagine, you know, how much of a benefit you could get if you standardized detection, temporal detection algorithms. I mean, that alone would be able to allow all of these different disease surveillance systems, whether it's Essence, RODS, whoever, you know, New York City, whoever, you know, being able to have, now you've got a suite of services that they could all plug in and use without any extra additional IT support. I mean, that seems to me, or, you know, NLP, you know, Medley, for example. So it may not be something that has to be across the board, you know, every type of tool has to meet some certain interface, but for those instances, I could see it being just unbelievably beneficial.